Now on BFBS, we begin a classic yarn of mystery and intrigue.
It's young Dean.
What's the matter?
What's happening?
Oh, it's Victor Dean.
I think he's dead.
We present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey in Murder Must Advertise by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted for radio by Alistair Beaton. With Alan Cuthbertson as Chief Inspector Parker, John Quentin as Mr. Ingleby, and Richard O'Callaghan as Mr. Willis. Episode 1, Death Comes to Pym's Publicity, or The Surprising Metamorphosis of Lord Peter Wimsey.
Look, tell him I'm not happy about the headline. Flush your kidneys with fizzlets. It's not quite right, somehow. And then, after you've done that, Miss Rossiter, I'd like you to make sure the Laxamalt campaign is well in hand. Last month's advertisements were half a day late.
Yes, Mr. Hankin.
Oh, and by the way, Miss Rossiter, there is a new copywriter coming today.
Oh, yes, Mr. Hankin.
His name is Breeden. I can't tell you much about him. Mr. Pym engaged him himself. But you will see that he's looked after.
Yes, Mr. Hankin.
He will have Mr. Dean's room.
Right, Mr. Hankin.
I should think that Mr. Ingleby could take him in hand and show him what to do.
Yes, Mr. Hankin. Excuse me, Mr. Ingleby, but Mr. Hankin says...
If it's Tomboy Toffee, it's being typed.
It isn't Tomboy. It's a new copywriter.
What, already? Before those shoes were old? Why, they only buried little Dean on Friday.
All part of the modern system of push and go, Miss Meteyard. All very distressing on an old-fashioned gentlemanly firm. Well, I suppose I've got to put this blighter through his paces. Why am I left with the baby?
Oh, rot, Ingleby. You've only got to warn him not to use the director's lav and not to tumble down the iron staircase.
You are the most callous woman, Miss Meteyard. Well, as long as they don't put the fellow in with me.
It's all right, Mr. Ingleby. He's having Mr. Dean's room.
Good. What's he like?
Well, Mr. Hankin said he didn't know. Mr. Pym took him on.
Oh, gosh. Friend of the management.
Oh, I think I've seen him. Supercilious-looking blighter. Yes, I ran into him coming out of Pimmy's room yesterday. Horn rims, cross between Ray Flynn and Bertie Wooster.
Death, where is thy sting?
Oh, well, makes a little excitement.
Oh, don't you think we've had rather too much of that lately, Miss Meteyard? Oh, by the way, could I have your subscription for the wreath? You told me to remind you.
Yes, rather. What is it? Bob? Well, here's half a crown. And you'd better take the sweep money out of it as well.
Thanks awfully, Miss Meteyard. I do hope you get a horse this time.
Uh-oh, Hankin's coming.
Mr. Ingleby.
Yes, Mr. Hankin?
This is Mr. Breeden. Hmm. You will show him what he has to do. I think you might start him on margarine. I don't think Mr. Ingleby was up in your time, Mr. Breeden. He was at Trinity. Your Trinity, not ours.
How do you do, Ingleby?
How do you do?
And when you produce some ideas on Dairyfield's margarine, Mr. Breeden, bring them along to my room and we'll go over them.
Oh, righty-ho.
Well, Breeden, you'd better know everybody. Miss Rossiter and Miss Meteyard are our guardian angels. Type our copy, correct our grammar, provide us with pencils and paper, and feed us on coffee and cake. Miss Rossiter is the blonde and Miss Meteyard is the brunette. Gentlemen prefer blondes, but personally I find them both equally seraphic. How do you do, Miss Rossiter?
How do you do?
Miss Meteyard?
How do you do, Mr. Breeden?
Miss Meteyard is one of the brighter ornaments of our department. She makes the vulgarest limericks ever recited within these chaste walls.
Then we shall be friends.
Would you like to be in on the Derby sweep, Mr. Breeden? You're just in time for the draw.
Oh, rather. How much?
Sixpence.
Sixpence? By Jove, absolutely, Miss Rossiter, yes. Must be in the jolly old sweep, what? I must say, it's frightfully good of you. Yeah, there we are.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I suppose we'd better take him along to his dog kennel, eh, Miss Rossiter?
Oh, yes. This way, Mr. Breeden.
Oh, righty-ho. Rather. Yes.
We're all along this corridor. You'll find your way about in time. That's Willis's room over there. A comrade in affliction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Garrett's room. Mr. Garrett is a man of weight and experience and does not come and frivol in the typist room. He goes out for his elevenses and assumes seniority, though he hath it not. And this is your room, next to mine.
Ah.
That iron staircase opposite me goes down to the floor below.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly group managers and conference rooms. Don't fall down it, by the way. The man whose room you've got tumbled down it last week and killed himself. No. Bust his neck and cracked his skull. On one of those knobs. Well, here you are. Much the same as the other rooms, except that the radiator doesn't work very well. Still, that won't worry you just at present. This was Dean's room.
The chap who fell downstairs?
Yes.
It was awful, you know, Mr. Breeden.
Oh, it must have been Miss Rossiter.
Mr. Hankin was just giving me dictation when we heard the most frightful crash. He said, "Good God, what's that?" I thought it must have been one of the office boys, because one of them fell down last year carrying an Elliot Fisher typewriter, and it sounded exactly like it, only worse. And I said, "I think one of the boys must have fallen downstairs, Mr. Hankin." And he said, "Careless little devils," and went on dictating. My hand was so shaky I could hardly make my outlines. Then Mr. Ingleby rang past, and another door opened, and then we heard the most terrific shriek. And Mr. Hankin said, "Better go and see what's happened." So I went out and looked down, and I couldn't see anything because there was such a bunch of people standing around. And then Mr. Ingleby came tearing up with such a look on his face. You were as white as a sheet, Mr. Ingleby, you were, really.
Possibly. 3 years in this soul-searing profession have not yet robbed me of all human feeling. But that will come in time.
Mr. Ingleby said, "He's killed himself." And I said, "Who?" And he said, "Mr. Dean." And I said, "You don't mean that." And he said, "I'm afraid so." And I went back to Mr. Hankin and said, "Mr. Dean's killed himself." And he said, "What do you mean killed himself?" And then Mr. Ingleby came in, and Mr. Hankin gave one look at him and went out. And I went down by the other staircase and saw them carry in Mr. Dean along to the boardroom. His head was all hanging sideways.
Does this kind of thing happen often?
Not with such catastrophic results. But that staircase is definitely a death trap.
Well, anyhow, Mr. Breeden, what happened next?
Yes, thank you, Miss Rossiter.
Oh. Well, I must get back to the typist room.
Phew. Well, we'd better start you off, eh, Breeden?
Oh, righty-ho. I gather I'm on margarine.
Yes. Just be thankful you're not on new tracks like I am.
New tracks?
Yes. Nerves need new tracks and all that. The whole scheme's coordinated by Tallboy.
Who's Tallboy?
Tallboy? Oh, he's the group manager for New Tracks. He makes Tuesday quite the foulest day of the week.
Who? How's that?
Well, there's a New Tracks 11-inch double got to be got ready every Tuesday for the Morning Gazette. Tallboy always kicks up a fuss if it isn't exactly the way he wants it. Anyway, you'd better look through this to see the kind of thing we've been doing for margarine and then think up some headlines.
Oh.
Your story is, of course, that Dairyfield's Green Pastures margarine is everything that the best butter ought to be and only costs 9 pence a pound. Are they like a cow in the picture?
Why? Is it made of cow fat?
Well, I dare say it is, but you mustn't say that. People wouldn't like the idea. The picture of the cow suggests the taste of butter, that's all.
Oh, I see. Rather clever, that, what? Well, now, let's see. Something like, better than butter and half the price? Simple appeal to the pocket, that the idea?
Yes, but you mustn't knock butter. They sell butter as well.
Oh.
You can say it's as good as butter.
But in that case, what does one find to say in favour of butter? I mean, if the other stuff's as good and doesn't cost so much, what's the argument for buying butter?
You don't need an argument for buying butter. It's natural human instinct.
Oh, I see. Well, what about, bigger and butter value for money?
Well, that has the right feel about it.
Wait a moment. Hang on. You'd be ready to bet it was butter, huh?
The Dairyfield people are rather straight-laced about betting.
Yeah, we'll shake them up a bit then, what?
Well, as a matter of fact, Reedon, it's better not to throw one's weight about here till one's been 10 years or so in the place. It's not encouraged. This place is more like a government office than an advertising agency. Hustle's not wanted. and initiative and curiosity are politely shown the door.
Oh, thanks awfully, Ingleby. Thanks for telling me.
Not at all. I must go now. We'll travel from Tallby if the new track's 11-inch double. Isn't ready for the printers by 3 o'clock. Oh, damn and blast new tracks. May all its directors get elephantiasis and ingrowing toenails.
Ooh, hey, dear me, Ingleby.
Take my word for it, Breeden. You'll feel the same after a few years.
Have another chocolate eclair, Miss Rossiter.
Thank you, Miss Meteyard. I don't think I shall. You'll put on pounds and pounds if you eat all that sweet stuff.
That's what you come to a tea room for, ducky.
What do you think of our new Mr. Breeden?
The Pimlico pet? Well, I think he's rather a lamb, and his shirts are simply too marvellous. Oh, he won't be able to keep that up on Pim's salary, bonus or no bonus, or the silk socks either.
He's been brought up silk-lined, all right. One of the new poor, I expect. Lost all his money in the slump or something.
Either that, or his family have got tired of supporting him and pushed him out to scratch for himself.
I think he's very clever. Did you see that idiotic headline he put up for Margarine the other day? It's a far, far butter thing. And he nearly sniggered himself sick. I think the pet was pulling his leg.
Oh, he'll make a copywriter. He's got the flair, if you know what I mean.
I hope he does. He's got beautiful manners. And he pays his tea bill like a little gentleman.
Oh, the pet's tongue runs on ball bearings.
But I say, Miss Meteyard, do you know what I did yesterday?
No.
Breeden came in and asked for Mr. Hankins' carbons. I was in an awful rush and said, help yourself. Well, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
10 minutes afterwards, I discovered he'd gone off with Mr. Hankins' private letter file.
Oh, no.
But he must have been blind, because it's marked private in red letters an inch high. So I haired off to Breeden, and there he was, calmly reading Hankey's private letters, if you please.
Oh, really?
You've got the wrong file, Mr. Breeden, I said. You oughtn't be reading that. It's frightfully confidential.
Mm.
And he wasn't a bit ashamed. He just handed it back with a grin and said, really? Good gracious me, I'm so sorry.
Silly ass.
Still, it's very interesting to see what salary everyone gets, he said. He seemed to think it was awfully funny, and asked how long it would take him to reach Dean's salary.
How much was Dean getting?
Six.
Not worth much more, in my opinion. The department will be better tempered without him, I must say. He did rile 'em sometimes. Now, if Dean hadn't fallen downstairs, there'd have been a good old bust-up between him and Willis.
I never could understand what it was all about.
Well, I believe there was a girl in it.
Oh.
Mm. Willis used to go about with Dean quite a lot at the weekend, and then it all stopped suddenly. They had an awful row one day last March. I heard them going at it hammer and tongs in Dean's room. Hmm. Well, I suppose we'd better push off home or we shan't be fit for anything in the morning. Now, where's the cheque? I had two cakes more than you, so mine is one and a penny and yours is ninepence. Now, if you give me a bob and I give you tuppence and the waitress tuppence and settle up at the desk, we shall be all square.
Right.
Got an India rubber handy?
Good afternoon, Miss Meachard. I expect so, yes. Have a look in that pencil drawer.
Oh, hello, what's this?
What?
This. It's Victor Dean's scarab. It ought to have been sent back to his sister.
Oh, that. Yes, I knew that was there, but I didn't know who it belonged to. Not a bad little thing, what? Real onyx. Quite heavy. Of course, it's not Egyptian. It's not even very old.
Probably not, but Dean adored it. He thought it was a surefire mascot. He always had it in his waistcoat pocket or sitting in front of him while he worked. If he'd had it on him that day, he wouldn't have tumbled downstairs. At least that's what he'd have said himself.
It's chipped at the edge here, look.
Hmm.
What sort of a chap was Dean?
Well, speaking ill of the dead and all that, but... Well, I wasn't exactly keen on him. I thought he was a rather unwholesome little beast.
In what way?
For one thing, I didn't like the people he went about with. He used to tag around with that Diane de Momery set. You know, wicked parties and fast cars and all that. Dean thought it was the smart thing to do, I suppose.
How old did you say he was?
Oh, 26 or 27.
How did he come to be here?
Usual thing. Needed cash, I suppose. You can't lead a gay life on nothing, and he wasn't anybody, you know. I mean, his father was a bank manager or something. Deceased. So I suppose he had to push out and earn his keep. He knew how to look after himself, all right.
Then how did he get in with the De Momery lot?
Somebody picked him up, I should think. He had a certain kind of good looks. How you came to be here, Mr. Breeden, is a good deal more interesting than how Victor Dean came here. They start new copywriters without experience at £4 a week. About enough to pay for a pair of your shoes. And now I'd better get back to Tomboy Toffee.
Careless, Peter, careless.
I say, Breeden, is Brewer here?
Don't know him, actually, Ingleby, but you have my permission to search. The priest's hole and the concealed staircase are at your service.
Brewer, you know Brewer's dictionary of phrase and what's it. Anyway, how do you spell Cronon Hottentologos?
Oh, I can spell that. And Aldiborno Tofosco Fornio, too. The crossword?
No, headline for good judge's tobacco. Isn't it hot? Now I suppose we're going to have a week's dust and hammering.
Why?
Ah, the fiat has gone forth. The iron staircase in the corridor is condemned.
Who by?
The board.
Oh, rot, they mustn't do that.
What do you mean?
Well, admission of liability, ain't it?
And about time, too.
Well, I suppose so, but,
You look quite startled. I was beginning to think you had some sort of personal feeling in the matter.
Oh, good Lord, no, why should I? They're just a matter of principle, that's all. Except that the staircase does seem to have had its uses in eliminating the unfit. I gather that the late Victor Dean was not universally beloved.
I don't know. I never saw much harm in him. Of course, the Meachard woman loathed him.
Why?
Well, she's a decent sort of female, but she makes no allowances. My motto is live and let live. But protect your own interests. How are you getting on with Margarine?
Haven't touched it yet, actually. I've been trying to get out a name for 20 million shilling tea. As far as I can make out from Hankin, it has no qualities except cheapness to recommend it. The name, however, must suggest solid wealth and respectability.
Why not call it Domestic Blend? Nothing could sound more reliable. And obviously nothing could suggest so much dreary economy.
Oh, I say, what ho. Oh, that absolutely wags the nail over the crumpet. Absolutely the caterpillar's boot, right? Well, I'll put it to him and see what he says. Oh, dear, I've had too much lunch. I don't think anybody ought to work at 2:30 in the afternoon. It's unnatural.
Everything's unnatural in this job. Oh, my God, here's someone with something on a tray. Go away, young woman, go away.
I'm sorry, but Mr. Hankin says, will you please taste these samples of porridge and report upon them?
My dear Miss Rossiter, look at the time.
I know. Awful, isn't it? They're trying out tinned porridge.
What do we have to suffer in the service of the public?
Well, perhaps I can help, Miss Rossiter.
Oh.
Put it down. Now then. Take this down while it's fresh in my mind. Vintage A. Fine, full-bodied, sweet, nutty flavour, fully matured. A grand masculine porridge. Vintage B. Extra sick, refined, delicate character, requiring only...
Oh, Mr. Breeden.
Tell me, timeless houri, what was wrong with my lamented predecessor? Why did Miss Meachard hate him, and why does Ingleby praise him with faint dams?
Why? Because he didn't play fair. He was always snooping round other people's rooms, picking up their ideas and showing them up as his own.
Oh, really? Oh, I see. Ever met Dean's sister?
Pamela Dean? She's something to do with silkenet hosiery, isn't she?
Is she?
She and Victor Dean ran a little flat together. She was as smart as paint, but rather silly, I thought, the only time I saw her.
Not impressed, eh?
No, but I've an idea. Our Mr. Willis was a bit smitten in that direction at one time. But it didn't seem to come to anything.
Oh, I see.
Of course, it wouldn't do to mention it to Mr. Willis. I think he's a bit sensitive about it.
Oh, quite. It's so easy to put one's foot in it in a new place, ain't it?
Look, Breeden, I really wish you'd mind your own business. I don't wish to discuss Dean with you or with anybody else. Is that clear?
Well, I'm sorry, Willis. Didn't mean to upset you.
If you're on Dean's game, you better clear out. I'm not interested.
What was Dean's game? I didn't know him. Never heard of him till I came to Pym's publicity.
You didn't know Dean. Why bring him up? He went about with a gang of people I didn't care for, that's all. And from the look of you, I should have said you belonged to the same bright crowd.
The De Momery crowd?
Oh, it's not much use your pretending you don't know all about it, is it, Breeden?
Ingleby told me Dean was a hanger-on at that particular bunch of bright young people. I've never met any of them. They think me terribly ancient, they would really. Besides, I don't think that they're very nice to know. Some of them are really naughty, you know. Did Mr. Pym know that Dean was a bright young thing?
I shouldn't think so, or he'd have buzzed him out double quick. What business is Dean of yours, anyway?
Oh, absolutely none. None, whatever. I just wondered about him, that's all. He seems to have been a sort of misfit here, not quite imbued with the Pym spirit, if you see what I mean.
No, he wasn't. And if you take my advice, you'll leave Dean and his precious friends alone, or you won't make yourself too popular. The best thing Dean ever did was to fall down that staircase.
Nothing in life became him like the leaving of it, what? But it seems a bit harsh, all the same. Somebody must have loved him. For he must be somebody's son, as the dear old song says. Had he any family? There's a sister, at least, isn't there?
What the devil do you want to know about his sister?
I don't. I just asked, that's all. Well, I think I'd better toddle off. I've enjoyed this little talk.
So, Lord Peter Wimsey has become one of the world's workers, eh?
Yes. In the shape of one Mr. Breeden, I am pulling down 4 solid quid a week. Amazing sensation. First time I've ever earned a cent. I am grinning, Charles, with honest pride. Just like my good brother-in-law has been doing all these years.
You make me sound like a Cheshire cat.
Ah, but you have good cause to feel pleased, Charles. There's many a member of the criminal fraternity behind bars because of the efforts of Chief Inspector Charles Parker.
I try to do my job. Well, now listen, Peter. What's this case all about, anyway?
Well, I'm best if I know, old lad. Old Pym had this letter that was worrying him, sent to him by Pamela Dean. That's the victim's sister. Well, Pym didn't want the police snooping around his beloved advertising agency, so I got asked to buzz along and investigate. So I buzzed, and there I am. Strictly incognito.
Your narrative style, though racy, is a little elliptical.
Well, now look, Charles. On a Monday afternoon, the 25th of May, to be particular, a young man, Victor Dean by name, employed as a copywriter in the firm of Pym's Publicity Limited, advertising agents, falls down an iron spiral staircase on their premises situated in the upper part of Southampton Row, and dies immediately of injuries received. To wit, one broken neck, one cracked skull, one broken leg, and minor cuts and contusions various. The time of this disaster is, as nearly as can be ascertained, 3:30 in the afternoon.
Pretty extensive injuries for a fall of that kind.
So I thought before I saw the staircase. To proceed, I then find this piece of paper in the desk of the deceased. Have a look at it, Charles.
7th of January, G. 14th of January, O. 21st of January, A. 28th of January, P. 5th of February, G. But, Peter, it doesn't make any sense.
How right you are, old lad. It doesn't make any kind of sense. Now, on the day after the sudden demise of Victor Dean, his sister Pamela sent to Mr. Pym a half-finished letter which she had found among her brother's things.
Have you got it there?
Yes, I have. Now, you'll notice that the letter is dated about 10 days previous to the death, and appears to have been laid aside, as if the writer wanted to think over the wording a bit more carefully.
Dear Mr. Pym, I think it only right you should know that there is something going on in the office which is very undesirable and might lead to serious... that's all there is.
Yes. And before he can complete the letter, young Victor Dean falls downstairs and is killed. Now, is that, or is it not, my dear Charles, a darn suspicious circumstance?
Mm.
In that episode of Murder Must Advertise, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Chief Inspector Parker, Alan Cuthbertson, Mr. Ingleby, John Quentin, Mr. Willis, Richard O'Callaghan, Mr. Hankin, Frank Williams, Miss Rossiter, Joanna Wake, Miss Meatyard, Frances Jeter. Murder Must Advertise was adapted by Alistair Beaton from the book by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Martin Fisher.
To BFBS, broadcasting from London.